Australia's second biggest city is facing restrictions which feel like the middle of a war. A nighttime curfew, workplaces to shut down. We're going to head to that state in a second. Hello, Avani Dias here. This is the Hack Podcast. And later, Donald Trump wants to ban TikTok. We'll find out why this platform, which is pretty fun and innocent, has become the center of a global political fight. And we'll talk about the biggest updates in space because, to be honest, I'm over the news on this planet at the moment.
Hack. Melbourne has spent its first night under a curfew as part of a major COVID crackdown.
On Triple J.
What used to be among the world's most livable cities is now in one of the most strict coronavirus lockdowns on the globe. Today, the Victorian Premier has announced many workplaces are going to shut down to stop 1 million Victorians from moving around that state. And there's now a nighttime curfew in place in Melbourne. And just before we came on air, the Prime Minister has announced paid pandemic leave for Victorians. So if you don't have sick leave and have to stay home with symptoms or while waiting for COVID test results, you can now get $1,500 and you can get it more than once. Call me if your work is being restricted in Victoria. I'd love to hear from you. 1-300-055-536. Joe Lauder has this story.
I'm grateful that Dan has made this call because I think it will save a lot of lives and protect me and my family from getting sick. But I feel sad that I can't go and visit my family in Perth. I'm sad for my son who won't be able to see his friends at daycare.
Look, I'm glad it's happening now and not waiting another 3 months. I just want to get on top of it.
I am worried about people in the community and in my family and friendship circles. And, you know, if you are feeling strong at the moment, now's a good time to reach out to people and show support for them.
Ask anyone living in Melbourne and who will tell you that the second lockdown doesn't feel anything like the last time. I know I'm not having as many drinks on house party or big baking sessions or the group dance classes this time round. It's not just the masks that we have to wear or the new curfew. This time there's a lot of worry and frustration and fatigue. And this time round, COVID is spreading a lot through the community. But at the same time, there's some relief and there's lots of resilience.
Obviously, the escalation in the pandemic is a bit of a worry, but I do at the same time feel quite a lot of resolve and resilience.
Do you know what? I'm actually really quite surprised how well I'm doing. Normally, I'm someone around this time of the year in winter that suffers from quite severe depression. I'm actually doing quite well. I'm quite surprised. And I think it's because at this time of having time to myself, I actually can work on myself.
So in case you're lucky enough to not know the details yet, stage four restrictions basically mean people in Melbourne can't go further than 5Ks from their house, except for a few key reasons. Here's the Victorian Premier Dan Andrews announcing the news yesterday.
You will no longer be able to leave home or go any further away from your home than a 5 kilometre radius. You will not be able to be at any point more than 5 kilometres away from your home. Only one person will be able to go shopping once per day. You will be allowed to have 1 hour of exercise no further than 5 kilometres from your home.
And there's a police-enforced curfew.
And it will run from 8pm to 5am each and every day. And the only reason to be out of your home between the hours of 8pm and 5am is to get care, to give care, or to go to and from work or be at work.
Last night I was working on our sister show, The Hookup, which finishes at 11 o'clock at night. And driving home through Melbourne CBD after curfew, it made me feel like I was in some movie where I was one of the only people alive, which I know it sounds cliche, but it's true. There really aren't many times that you get to experience a city of 5 million people all staying at home.
Ultimately, all of these changes are about limiting movement. All of these changes are about limiting the number of people that we come in contact with.
Victoria's had 429 new cases of COVID-19 in the past 24 hours, and 13 people have died. 8 of those people were in aged care homes. Dan Andrews said yesterday that there's still some alarming trends that made them pull the trigger on the new restrictions.
We have 760 mystery cases. they are active cases where we cannot trace back the source of that person's infection.
It's not just in Melbourne either. All of regional Victoria is heading into stage three restrictions that Melbourne's had for over 3 weeks.
That will mean that restaurants, cafes, bars, gyms, a whole range of other settings, we're well and truly acquainted with those, will need to close from midnight next Wednesday. That is not the position we wanted to be in, but we cannot have a situation where this continues to grow and grow in regional Victoria.
This afternoon, Dan Andrews also announced big changes to businesses as part of stage four restrictions in Melbourne, with lots of businesses set to shut their doors from Thursday. So there are three categories for businesses.
Group of businesses that will not close, will not change, they will not be modified. Supermarkets, grocery stores, bottle shops, pharmacies, petrol stations, banks, news agencies, post offices.
Then the businesses that will close.
Retail will close, some manufacturing will close, some admin will close.
And the last category of businesses are the ones that will have to scale down their workforce, like construction sites and meatworks. The Chief Health Officer, Brett Sutton, says the stage three restrictions weren't for nothing.
They genuinely flattened the curve, but they flattened the curve to a point where we got to a plateau of 400 or 500 cases every day. That would have continued indefinitely. These restrictions are very substantial, and I expect, absolutely expect, that we'll see transmission driven down and cases to decrease over time.
Hack Triple J. Our reporter Joe Lauder there telling us just what it's like in Melbourne at the moment. Someone's texted, I'm a mental health social worker and I'm seeing an increase in difficulties in the community. We never see any acknowledgement about the impact of this and the work that we do. Mars has texted as well. He says, I'm a North Queensland based line haul driver. I've been running Melbourne, Mildura and up to Tarcutta. It's hard for the Melbourne drivers. Yeah, get in touch. Do you work somewhere that'll have to change how it operates or even shut down in Victoria under these new restrictions? Maybe you're a meat worker or you're in retail. Give me a ring, 1300 055 36. Let's find out how this will all affect your day-to-day work. Felicity Salbutz is from the Young Workers Centre in Melbourne. Felicity, thanks for your time. We know young people make up such a large proportion of insecure workers in Australia, casual jobs with no sick leave. The Prime Minister has just announced paid pandemic leave in Victoria. What do you think about that?
Hi, Avani. We have been supporting and calling for paid pandemic leave for months now. We welcome Scott Morrison's announcement in the last 30 minutes that he will introduce paid pandemic leave for Victorian workers who need to isolate for 14 days and don't have access to sick leave. This will make a huge difference for workers, particularly young workers who are in really insecure, casualised workforces and don't have that access to sick leave. But it does talk to a bigger problem of insecure work. There are 3.3 million Australian workers without access to sick leave, and that's about 32% of all working people. And we definitely welcome it being introduced into Victoria, but I would love to see it, and we'd love to see it extended to workers in all of the states to avoid workplace transmissions of COVID-19. Here in Victoria, we've been experiencing about 80% of transmissions in workplaces, and it'd be great to see it extended into other states to avoid other states getting to this point.
Yeah. What do you think about the timing of this? Because there have been calls for paid pandemic leave since the beginning of coronavirus, right?
Yeah, so the Australian Union Movement have been calling for paid pandemic leave since, you know, back in March, months ago now. We would have obviously welcomed this a long time ago, but nevertheless, more than happy to see it come into place now. It couldn't come any sooner.
And in terms of the workplaces that we're seeing that'll shut down in Victoria, up to 1 million Victorians are going to be affected in that situation. What do you think about that? How will that affect people's work day to day?
Yeah, so businesses in Victoria are closing down on a greater scale to help stop the spread of this virus. Now, it is a hard thing to do, but it's the right thing. It'll mean that 250,000 workers will be impacted with the closures due to come into effect at midnight on Wednesday. another quarter of a million workers have already been stood down, and 500,000 are already working from home. So it does mean that about a million workers won't be travelling to work every day.
Yeah, and what about, you know, keeping people in work to go through the next couple of weeks? Because businesses can get up to $5,000 in grants if they do need to shut down and they're in Victoria. Is that going to be enough to keep young people actually in work and not have to move on to JobSeeker or Dole payments?
So, yeah, you're right. We've heard today that businesses will get an additional $5,000 in metropolitan Melbourne. And ultimately, we need to make sure that money is getting into the pockets of young workers who need to put food on the table and pay their bills. And one of the best ways for this to happen would be if the JobKeeper scheme was extended to all workers. There's currently about 1.1 million casuals who have been excluded from the JobKeeper scheme because they haven't been with their employer for over 12 months. We know a vast majority of those are young workers. And we also call on the Morrison government to cancel its reduction in the rate of JobKeeper, which is due to come into effect on the 28th of September.
Emma's called in. Is your work affected in Victoria?
Yeah, it has been. So I'm a veterinary nurse at a vet clinic, a general practice clinic. It's been busier than ever. A lot of people are, I guess, avoiding the social distancing aspect of it. And yes. I think they're looking for things to come out for.
Emma, are they coming in for really, I guess, emergency operations and that kind of thing?
No, so we're still getting a lot of routine vaccinations as adult animals, which can be delayed for at least a few weeks, and things like nail trims are not essential.
Yeah, totally. Thanks heaps for the call, Emma. Jay, you're actually in South Australia, but what do you think about, I guess, this pandemic pay that's coming into action?
Yeah, I've got a couple of mates that are basically taking a road trip kind of thing, and just kind of living off the pay that's allowed, basically.
Right, yeah. So they got some sort of pay because of sick, not having sick leave or something like that. Is that the case?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, I still agree that it should be rolled out, but, yeah, there's always going to be loopholes and whatnot, so...
Yeah, thanks for the call, Jay. Felicity Salbutts from the Young Workers Centre. There's often concerns about people misusing these paid pandemic leave and all these kind of entitlements that come around. What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, the impact of COVID-19 on young workers can't be underestimated. We know that it's young workers who will be disproportionately impacted. We know that young workers have been doing it particularly tough during this pandemic and they're facing the highest levels of unemployment. Unemployment for 15 to 24-year-olds rose from 11.6% to 16.4%. From March to June, that just shows that young workers are going to be bearing the brunt of this pandemic for, you know, a decade to come, if not their entire working lives.
Yeah.
I don't think it can be underestimated how much this pandemic is impacting young workers.
Definitely. And Felicity, the stats really back that up as well. Appreciate you coming back on Hack and telling us all those figures about how this is going to affect young workers in particular. Techs are going off. Luke says, why isn't the whole of Australia not trying to do what New Zealand did? They went hard and achieved eradication. We're going to get to that in a second, Luke. John from the Gold Coast says, I separated from my partner at the start of the year. I haven't seen my 17-month-old son since January because he lives in Melbourne. I don't know if I'll be able to see my son before Christmas. It's hard on my mental health. I can only imagine what that's like being separated from your family. But yeah, Melbourne's restrictions are among the strongest in the world, but Australia is not the first place to take on this kind of lockdown. In March, when the pandemic first started in our part of the world, New Zealand introduced stage 4 restrictions, and now coronavirus is said to be eradicated there. Life is back to normal for Kiwis, and it's been 93 days since a positive case with an unknown source in New Zealand. So let's get some advice from our neighbours on this. Associate Professor in Microbiology, Susie Wiles, has been advising the New Zealand government on its pandemic plan. She's from the University of Auckland. Susie, thanks for your time. Do you feel like this is a bit of a flashback for you hearing about what's going on in Melbourne?
Look, it's absolutely devastating what's happening. But it's really interesting how everybody describes lockdowns because they're so different. So even your level four lockdown is not as strict as our level four lockdown. So we weren't allowed things like takeaways and stuff. They all restaurants and cafes were closed, even for takeaways, for us at our level four.
And in New Zealand, yeah, it was obviously a lot more strict than it is in Victoria. So do you believe that Victoria should take that extra step as well?
Oh, well, the stricter you are, the more you limit people's interactions and people's movement, the quicker you can get that transmission stopping. So if they stopped all of things like takeaways and stuff, that would remove another way that transmission can happen. And it would also remove a whole lot more people who will be going into work, right? The really important thing also, though, is that when you do these really strict measures, that you also relax them much more slowly. So we had, you know, this like almost 5 weeks at our alert level four. And then we got a few weeks at our alert level three, which was when we then got to do the takeaways, you know, and everything was sort of like done at sort of a couple of weeks at a time, just slowly opening up to see what the case numbers did. So what would really concern me is if everything opened up too fast after this level four lockdown.
And how did it feel for everyday Kiwis being in such a strict lockdown?
It was so weird. So I guess it depended on who you were and what your job was. Like those people who could work from home, you know, they obviously were trying to work from home while caring for children and all of that sort of thing. But then there were lots of people, obviously, who couldn't work. So we had a wage subsidy scheme that was put in. So people were, you know, if an employer could show that their, you know, business was affected, yeah, then they could apply for the scheme. And so, for example, my hairdresser was shut for months. And when I went back to for the first time to see him, he said it was fantastic because he was being paid, you know, his wage through, sure, the subsidy. But he was at home with his kids and, you know, they just basically hung out. So I think it was a very different experience for different people.
Susie, it is interesting, you know, coronavirus seems to be eradicated in New Zealand, but some experts have said we cannot really ever eliminate coronavirus completely because some people are asymptomatic. What is your take on that?
So the important thing about having these lockdowns and having them for a good portion of time is that you stop this, stop transmission between people. And even if there are people who are asymptomatic, they will go through their, you know, they will recover and stop shedding the virus. Then it's important that you don't allow it to come back in again, which is the stage that New Zealand's at, where we're stopping all the cases at the border. And then it's a case of having, you know, this managed quarantine and making sure the processes there are absolutely solid, you know, so that no cases can come in. And then what you've seen in Victoria is how quickly they can escalate out of control.
And that point about not letting cases come back in, you know, there was talk here of a trans-Tasman bubble so we could maybe travel to New Zealand. And today the New Zealand government has said Australia will have to go for 28 days without any community transmission before that kind of travel can begin. What are you advising the government to do there?
Well, it absolutely. I mean, we can only do these bubbles in places that are safe for us to do that. And the reality is that certainly in Victoria, you know, they hardly had any day without a case, even after their first lockdown. And that was because there was still some community transmission going on there. So, yeah, it's going to be, and it's where you have to go for this elimination strategy, where you really do the lockdowns for long enough that you do stop all this community transmission.
All right, Susie Wiles from the University of Auckland. Appreciate you giving us those insights. Someone's texted, you can't say that New Zealand's back to normal. We live in a globalised world. If people can't travel internationally, we are not totally back to normal.
Hack.
Year 11s and 12s for Term 2, they'll be working remotely.
On Triple J.
This sucks for everyone, but when you're in Year 12, you've got the huge stress of finishing exams, figuring out what to do next, and then the good bits like partying to celebrate the end of an era. And adding a global pandemic to that is so much to handle. This week, Year 12 students in Victoria will have their last day of school ever, much earlier than previous years. So I want to hear from you. If you're in that position, text me 0439 75 7555.
If he decides to sign an executive order on this, he could ban the app from this country.
On Triple J.
Whoever thought our videos on TikTok, mostly useless, should I say, but extremely entertaining content, would become such a huge political battleground between the world's superpowers. So in a classic anti-China move, Donald Trump has announced he's going to ban the app in the US. And the Australian government is also sus on TikTok, with revelations yesterday the company's going to be dragged before an inquiry into political interference. Our reporter Stephen Stockwell is our resident TikTok fan. He has a girlfriend, but Stocky's still worried about losing his only joy in ISO. Those are his words, not mine.
Thanks, Av. And yeah, look, I am very put out by this possibility, but it's also meant that I've spent all day on TikTok just scrolling through my For You page for just the right sounds for this story.
God! Okay, it's happening! Everybody stay calm!
What's the procedure, everyone? What's the procedure?
Stay calm!
Wait.
Everybody calm down!
Everybody right now is worried that TikTok's going to be banned in the United States.
Hey, what time is it?
It's muffin time!
Time of death, muffin time.
Wait, what?
Hey, when I jumped into the
moment of silence!
RIP TikTok. Trump's signing the document tomorrow. It's been a fun ride.
I'm joking, of course. My For You page is actually just all dogs, drinking games, people pointing out weird shit in their houses, and that lady with the tiny hands that she puts on the end of her fingers.
So yeah, hopefully this is all a sick joke. And if not, I love you guys. And it's been real.
So yeah, a TikTok ban. And this actually isn't a new idea. The US Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, was talking about this early last month.
Respect to TikTok, I want to put it in the broader context. We have been engaged in a constant evaluation about ensuring that we protect the privacy of American citizens and their information as it transits.
And I mean, US politics, right? Who knows what's ever going to happen? But Donald Trump started talking about this again over the weekend, and it all started to seem pretty real.
We're looking at TikTok. We may be banning TikTok. We may be doing some other things. There are a couple of options.
He's worried about what TikTok's doing with all the data it's collecting. And it is collecting a lot of data. Think facial recognition, details on who you hang out with, and how much you like seeing people throw it back. Sure, other tech companies collect data too, but other tech companies aren't owned by a Chinese parent company, which could be pressured by the Chinese government to hand over all those details.
But a lot of things are happening, so we'll see what happens. But we are looking at a lot of alternatives with respect to TikTok.
Now, we don't know what a ban would look like or if it would even work, but the other option is making the Chinese owner ByteDance sell the app to a US company. That company looks like it will be Microsoft, which confirmed a couple of hours ago that it's up for a takeover that would give it control of TikTok in the US, Canada, New Zealand, and in Australia.
Microsoft fully appreciates the importance of addressing the president's concerns. It is committed to acquiring TikTok, subject to a complete security review, providing proper economic benefits to the United States.
If that falls through and the US pushes ahead with a ban, they wouldn't actually be the first country to do that. India and Indonesia both blocked the app about a month ago, but Indonesia changed its mind after TikTok changed some security stuff, removed some negative content, and agreed to work more closely with the government. And if you think the app is safe here just because we're not the US, stop being so naive.
There are suspicions around TikTok, though, aren't there? Significant
suspicions. Yeah, there are, and I've seen all that.
A couple of weeks ago, during an interview with 3AW Radio, the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, admitted that the Australian government was a bit sus on TikTok.
And let me just say this, we are always very mindful of those risks, and we are always monitoring them very, very closely. If we consider there is a need to take further action than we are taking now, then I can tell you we won't be shy about it.
Part of the reason for that are fears that the Chinese government could use the data that TikTok has to try and influence Australian politics.
At what point do they intervene if they suspect that there is coordinated activity online that's seeking to disrupt and degrade Australian politics?
Labor Senator Jenny McAllister is chairing a committee investigating whether other countries are using social media to try and game the political process. TikTok will actually appear before that inquiry in a few weeks. And Jenny told the ABC that she's got some questions.
I'd like them to explain the way that they protect the privacy of users and their data. And I'd also like them to explain how it is that they moderate content.
Hack on Triple J.
Stephen Stockwell with that story, but I think we should start calling him Tick Stockwell. Heaps of texts on this. TikTok is not fun or innocent. It is 80% cringe. I disagree with that text. So, Rob from Byron has texted, Trump will do anything for a distraction. And another texter, this is so goddamn funny considering everything we found out with Snowden and the leaks there and the NSA. The US are just hypocrites.
Splashdown.
As you can see on your screen, we have visual confirmation for Splashdown.
Our world seems to be going to crap, so let's spend the rest of the show away from Earth in space. We just heard two NASA astronauts landing in Mexico this weekend after orbiting the Earth, and it was the first water landing of a spaceship since 1975. You could see the space capsule under four giant orange and white parachutes flying through the wind. And then it splashed into the Gulf of Mexico. And what's significant about this mission is it was the first trip in a capsule operated and built by SpaceX, Elon Musk's company. Brad Tucker is an astrophysicist. Brad, thanks for coming on the show. NASA and Elon working together. I feel like if you made a pro and con list for Elon Musk, would this fall into the pro side?
Look, you would have to hopefully it falls into pro. Eccentric is one word to describe Elon Musk.
Definitely.
But, you know, he did have a vision of trying to get private companies in the game of human spaceflight. You know, human spaceflight's like the top of the pyramid in terms of sending things into space. And a lot of people said private companies can't do it. You know, the safety, the technicalities, the complications, it's only for government agencies. And he proved a company can build their own capsule, do the flight, and do it quite well.
What does the use of a private company mean for the future of space discovery around the world?
Look, you know, one of the things that has enabled us to do is things are now coming in a lot cheaper. We forget that the space shuttle costs $1.5 billion every launch. So every time that shuttle went up, it was $1.5 billion. Now, they've developed the Crew Dragon program for about $2.9 billion. So if they just launched three times, NASA has recovered their money.
Wow.
And that means, yeah, all of those discoveries are so much cheaper. And because it's reusable, you can keep doing it again and again and again. So launching humans becomes cheaper, launching satellites, launching the next wave of technology to help us here on Earth, all is dramatically cheaper. And that's something that we're all already starting to see the benefits of indirectly.
Could this take some power away from NASA? I was reading it's the first time, you know, obviously that this isn't NASA purchasing, owning, and operating the hardware.
Yeah, look, I would say NASA had to come to that hard realization it couldn't do everything, right? That it couldn't try and go to the moon, it try and can't go to Mars and do all those great things and sending rovers to look for aliens and do this. You know, ultimately, this is space Uber. That's what SpaceX is doing. Now, they're doing it well, and that's a great thing. You wouldn't want the Australian government to run Uber for a number of reasons I think we could all agree with. So, you know, this is showing that you can do this quite effectively, and it's allowed NASA to invest in those big goals and what it does best, you know, those big achievements, and letting private companies make these things that are doable very efficient and effective.
So, Brad, does that mean space Uber could mean, you know, us dialing in a spaceship and heading to space anytime soon as a normal person?
So, I mean, normal depending on your bank account, which I think most of us don't apply. But in the long run, yes, you know, we will see private people launch into space, so not astronauts, in a year, by easy, probably this year. SpaceX already wants to launch the first, you know, full mission of astronauts, NASA astronauts in October. They're looking at private astronauts December, January. Virgin Galactic is also getting ready for tourists. Now, all of these will be expensive, but just like the beginning of airplane travel, it was really expensive. You have to wait for it to become cheaper until, you know, the Jetstars and Tigers come along and you can afford the holiday. But that is going to happen. That will happen. And not that distant future.
Right, so no legroom on the spaceships, I feel.
That's right, you have to pack your own penis.
Yeah.
And you don't want to see the bathroom accommodation, but it's still at least a trip into space.
Brad, would you do it?
So, as of now, no. And the reason being, not besides obviously the money, there's still a lot of safety to happen. You know, there's still a lot of things that humans go through in space health-wise. And these are astronauts who are going through it. Vision problems. You get DVT in your neck, right? You know, from like long-haul flights, you get that in your neck.
Oh, that's crazy.
I know. So there's a huge amount of those things that happen. And astronauts are like peak physical condition. So there's a lot of learning to happen before the average human with our health problems goes up. Now, it will be solved, but I don't want to be in the first wave. I'll let others go.
Fair enough. Totally. Astrophysicist Dr. Brad Tucker, thanks so much.
Hack on Triple J.
Someone texted, "Hello Mars, let's go destroy another planet. COVID ain't a virus. Humanity is a virus." That's an interesting point. What destruction will happen in outer space once this sort of thing starts to kick off? That is all we've got time for on this podcast, but I'll catch you on the next episode.